just like God gave Israel a king that she wanted, the king that she thought she wanted, God's going to give Israel the power and the money that she wants. And this will occur in Babylon. And you can be happy many times. God does not give you what you want, what you think you want, because it will ruin you. And so God gives you what you don't want. Jesus said that to Peter. When you were young, you went where you would. You did what you wanted to do. But when you're old and decrepit, people will take you places where you don't want to go and what you would not do. And this, believe it or not, is ultimately a blessing, because God gives Israel the desires of her heart. And those are nouns. It's not a verb. I want God to give me the desire of my heart. Desire as a verb. I want him to tell me what to want, to give me my wants. Verb, verbs, verbs. But many people ask God to give them the nouns. Verb, the nouns, wants. The things that they want. This is a mistake. The destruction of Babylon suggests something that is so utterly detestable to God that he singles it out for a display of his fury. We saw Babylon in a corresponding part of the previous temple section. We are in the temple section of the unveiling, I remind you, which means we are dealing with the spiritual bondage and the corresponding spiritual deliverance of the earth. Don't think spiritual necessarily means godly, because it doesn't. There are many spirits, as I said yesterday, many gods. Israel is taken captive by a strange spirit, by a false spirit, spirit that incites her to become great apart from this suffering Messiah. They don't want the cross. They've rejected it, and they're still rejecting it. The cross is humiliation. The cross is weakness. The cross is death. But from that comes a new humanity. Israel's not there. Even in the millennium, they will not enter into the new humanity. They're born again. The new humanity is for us. Israel's born again. We're not. But until that time, they are stuck. They are stuck as prisoners of their own lusts. God's laws have been broken continuously, and he will hurl into oblivion the nation and the city that so breaks, flaunts, then breaks his laws. In the unveiling 14:8, we read this: a messenger flying from heaven, the second messenger declaring, it falls, Babylon the Great has made all nations drink of the furious wine of her prostitution. We are going to talk about the wine of Babylon's prostitution, the intoxicant of Babylon, and it has caused the whole world to drink of it. Paul's lament over Israel in Romans chapter 2 was that because of you, all the nations of the world blaspheme God. The name of God is blasphemed everywhere. This is what happens to the nations. And judgment, in part, this is very real, comes to all the nations of the earth because of the apostasies of Israel. This is the temple section. We're in the sphere of religion. As a woman, Babylon is pictured as a woman. Babylon is a sovereign queen. As a city, it has a power and a sway over humanity that makes vassals of the kings of the earth. The kings of the earth themselves. This is different. We've never seen this before. The kings of the earth themselves must scrape and bow and worship this woman. Because the kings of the earth are weaker than the woman. The woman is stronger than the kings of the earth. The only thing today that we see comparable is the United Nations. The United Nations is a body that is more powerful than the kings of the earth, or wants to be. It's imperfect. Thank God. This is why I always thank God that human government is imperfect. Because power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. If humans could take the reins of government full sway, then we'd all be slaves. But we are like Christ standing before Pilate. You say you have power over me? Does a government say it has power over you? It would have no power unless it were given to it. And you serve another Lord and another master. The vital point in this whole consideration of Babylon, which we are now headlong into, is relationship with God. That's why we're in the temple section now. We're dealing with a relationship with God, which is important to God and which is being discarded here. In the political section, it was all about God ruling people. It was all about God wanting to be over you, and yet you're taken away by other kings, other lords. And God's going to wipe out these other kings and other lords and finally be the one who rules all the nations. That's rule. That's the throne section. It doesn't deal with God's relationship. It deals with his power to govern, his authority to tell this to go, this one to go here, that one to go there. When Christ returns, he disperses the nations, distributes them over the earth according as he wills. You go here, you go there. That's political. That's political. Matthew 25, that's political. The judgment of the nations. This is a relationship. This is God's heart now. There were two sins. There were two failures in the Garden of Eden. Adam sinned. He disobeyed a law. And he also offended God's feelings because God had fellowship with him. And the first pair chose another route. They chose to believe that their intimate God was a liar. Did God say, to die you shall be dying? And so this offended God's feelings. Of course, Christ answers both of these problems. Sins and offenses. These are two different things, sins and offenses. Sin breaks a law. Throne section. An offense hurts the feelings. Temple section. Worship. Relationship. God wants to be loved, and he wants to love in return. This is the jealousy that he feels when Israel runs after other, what? Lovers. It's relationship. Keep that in mind with Babylon, and you'll understand the depth and the severity of the destruction of Babylon. So there must be a great secret of great significance associated with this city, which the saints of that day, or if you're an Israelite listening to me in the day, need to understand. You need to understand the sin of Babylon and the ensuing destruction. Then we'll have a clear conception of Babylon's crimes, and then we'll be able to discern why God's so angry. But what you and I, what people of vision need to do, those who are reading this scroll ahead of time, is we need to look at the world movements today and see how Babylon is developing out of a lust for other lovers, other relationships. I talked about power and money yesterday. Today, I'm talking about another aspect of Babylon, that is worship, that is relationship. We're already seeing wealth and power being centralized, and that is critical to the formation of the wild beast, which devolves into, and it invites a sinful relationship with the woman. And the woman, at first, there are two women is faithful Israel, the remnant. And there is still the remnant going on, even as Babylon exists. The remnant still exists. They're being nurtured in the wilderness. But there is another woman, a dissolute woman, a prostitute, who sells herself to the powers that be. And this is apostate Israel. If we were to take a summary of all the interpretations that have been given to Babylon, what does Babylon mean? What does it signify? What city is this? Then we would never make sense out of any of it. And I told you how much, 1/9 of the unveiling is dedicated to a description not just of Babylon's rise, but of Babylon's destruction. Any interpretation of Babylon that is not literal misses the mark and leads us astray. And nearly every commentator has an idea about what Babylon could be. That's just the identification of the city. But when we get to the secret of the city, the secret of Babylon, or as King James says, the mystery of Babylon, how can that possibly be known if we can't even identify the city? This is where we get so easily lost. Because the secret of Babylon obviously comes on the heels of the identification of Babylon. One leads to another. We miss one, we miss it all. And so this is why expositors today don't know what the secret of Babylon is. Because they make guesses as to the identification of Babylon. And I myself used to do this. Maybe tomorrow I'll start by telling you what to me was an attractive interpretation of Babylon. But again, the rules we have been following here, the rules of language from day one, is that we will not interpret God's interpretations. If God says Babylon is a woman, we know that a city isn't a woman. But if he says that the woman is Babylon, then we know that the woman is the figure and Babylon is the reality. The woman is the figure. Babylon is the reality to which the figure points. It's an illustration. It's compared to a prostitute. It's not a female prostitute. It's a city. And when we believe God, then we will know what the city is. We will know where the city is. And we will recognize the early signs of the formation of this city. And not just the formation of the city, but the people who will populate it. From this city will go forth decrees and commands, power, wealth, amassed and concentrated in the ultimate communistic state that also, for the first time, brings worship, religion into the mix. That's never been done before. When have you seen a communist state bring worship and religion? This is all going to be concentrated in Babylon through apostate Israel. The secret of Babylon is that God's own people, those nearest and dearest to his heart, would betray him, apostatize to the point of doing the thing that Israel said it would never do. Even the apostates wouldn't do this. They would not go to a home of the nations, to the home of a man or a woman of the Gentiles. The Gentiles were dogs. The Gentiles were pigs to Israelites, but now they are marrying the dogs and the pigs. This is the shock and the secret of Babylon.